Last week, leading constitutional law scholar Pierre Defosse, Claude Leon Foundation Chair in Constitutional Governance at the University of Cape Town and author of the book Constitutionally Speaking, sparked a quite heated online debate when he said the time had come to reimagine how we deal with the transfer of intergenerational wealth in South Africa. The context is on the basis of persistent inequality along racial lines in the country, which has only been magnified by COVID-19. The arguments are as old as time immemorial, though, and Defosse has since written a follow-up responding to some of the critique. Well, to debate the issue of inheritance and estate taxes, we've assembled a quite formidable panel today. We were hoping to have Judge Dennis Davis, but I think there are a few technical issues with the Zoom room. So let's welcome our other guests, starting with Stuart Theobald, who is chairman of IntelliDex. We've also got Pierre Defosse, who joins us along with Magnus Haystack, investment strategist and director of Brenthurst Wealth. Pierre, kick us off. What was the nub of your original proposal, and were you surprised at the sort of debate, quite vitriolic at times, that this proposal has sparked?
Yes, so I said the proposal comes from, of course, looking at the world, but also South Africa, the inequality in the world, and the way in which different things, but in this case, in inheritance, specifically perpetuates inequality, because it is a kind of transfer of wealth from one generation to another that perpetuates the cycle of inequality. And so I said we have to rethink the whole idea of inheritance. Inheritance is an invented concept. It's an ideology. It doesn't have to be the way it is. And I suggested that there are different ways of dealing with it. The one that really got people upset is, of course, that maybe you should just cap it completely. Another one is to put a progressive tax on it, but a very steep progressive tax. The idea being that that will help to break the cycle of perpetuation of inequality. Of course, I knew that many people will be upset. I was a little bit surprised at the lack of engagement. Nobody really engaged with, is inheritance really a good thing? What is the moral justification for it? Why is it that if you do believe in meritocracy, which many people who engage in some way with it say they do, why is it that you justify that your children should get something for nothing? That's a slightly incoherence there in people's ideological positioning. So it would be more interesting for me if people actually engage in those things in detail.
Absolutely. I do think some people, Dion Kroos is one of them, and you reference him in your follow-up piece, to try and engage on the substance of the issue. And it's an important issue in a country such as South Africa's, with our deep levels of inequality. Stuart, you touched on some of the moral and philosophical questions in a recent Business Day column. What are some of the most important questions that we really need to be interrogating here around inheritance as this key driver and perpetuator of inequality? Equality in South Africa and indeed around the world?
I think my approach is to be pragmatic. I think we recognize that there are underlying principles that are important. Inequality is undesirable and we should embrace mechanisms that address it. But there are other moral issues that play into this question. You know, we believe that people should have some kind of property rights over what they earn in life. Now, we can debate over legitimate or illegitimate earnings and how that might affect things. But if we accept that there is such thing as legitimate earnings, then we accept that people have property rights over that, including to alienate those assets, so to give them away to those they wish to give them away to. We also have a clear view that there's something special about the relationship between parents and their children, that we accept that parents treat their children differently and have a different moral responsibility to their children than they do to members of the general public. So we accept that parents will give their children the best advantages they have in life. And, you know, really we think, that's important. We code it into custody law. We expect, you know, we don't say to a father who wants out of a marriage that you're fine, go off, you have no further responsibilities. In fact, we demand that they do have responsibilities to their children. So really a big part of our society and the way it's structured recognizes that special relationship, and that plays into inheritance law. And, you know, Pierre said earlier that inheritance is an invented practice. I mean, I'm not so sure. It's certainly a codified practice, but the idea that assets belong to a family and pass on is surely a very profound and old idea in human societies that we've just codified into inheritance. So, you know, I think these reflect different factors. Now, when we pull them all together, you end up with awkward compromises. And that's more or less what happens in inheritance and estate duties around the world, is that you do have some taxes, but they don't apply to inheritance to a spouse, for instance. And, you know, there's certain thresholds above which taxes kick in and not below. So we end up with awkward compromises that I think reflect all of those moral concerns.
And we'll come back to some of those issues after Magnus. You just let us know what you feel about the whole debate. I'm sure it is at this time driving a lot of business to advisory firms such as yourselves, because this is what you do. You do this sort of structuring.
Yes, good day, everybody. It's, I was also going to touch on the concept of that retirement is an invented concept, which is a phrase that Professor DeVos has not used before in his writings, of which there was quite a lot. So I would disagree with that, and one needs to refer everybody to that video that went around. I think Stuart sent it. He tweeted the video of Professor Milton Friedman, who was also asked a question about inheritance tax, and he flattened the argument in 2 minutes flat based on the basis that, you know, the role of family and family dynamisms play a much greater role than I think Professor De Vries's argument will acknowledge. And you find that, depending on the literature where you search, you know, the role of inheritance within families, within society, is acknowledged all over the world. Many countries protect the inheritance within a family context. Germany, for instance, will look askew at you when you start talking about taxing inheritance, etc. They have built their economies on precisely that, the transfer of wealth that over time builds medium to very large companies. And to tax that at within one generation, if I can bring it back to practical levels, will lead, as I tweeted, say, to a total destruction of the capitalist system in South Africa, of which I'm an advocate, as the only way to redress the injustices of the past. And there'll be no capital formation. You'll have a generation of people who will spend most of their time thinking up schemes how to get rid of assets out of their estates, whether it's into trusts. Maybe trust must be banned, and maybe donations must be banned. And it comes down to the concept of it's unfair that a certain individual or individuals inherit something for which someone else has worked for. You know, it resonates incorrectly on so many levels, and hence the I can understand the level of the anger of tweets that Foss got, and yes, a lot of them were personal, a lot of them were vicious, but it's the fundamental starting point of the unfairness of it all. Where do you draw the line if you start basing a whole society on the concept of fairness? Is it unfair that other people are more attractive than other people, or skinnier, or fatter, or thinner? Is it unfair for someone to win the lottery? It becomes quite absurd in the end. On the basis of unfairness, it must be taken away from people so we can all start fresh from base one. That is not my definition of a meritocracy, most definitely not.
On this issue of meritocracy, Pierre, and you do make the point that social solidarity should at least be equal to the nuclear family, or as you call it, naked self-interest. Why would you argue that should be on equal footing as opposed to this nuclear family concept, which both Stuart and Magnus have touched on as a key driver of human motivation? The fact that a parent wants to ensure that their children perhaps are left in a slightly better position than they found themselves in.
Yeah, you see, the problem with that argument is it's starting point, it has a concept of family that is actually very not reflective of how people really live. There are, of course, you have people with one a husband and a wife and 2.5 children and a dog. But most families in South Africa and more so over the world are not like that anymore. So our current inheritance system is really odd because on the one hand, if you don't have a will, there is a kind of succession that happens very much based on the nuclear family that doesn't exist anymore in many ways. If you have a will, there is no obligation of you to bequeath to your children. So there's no protection for the family in that narrow nuclear family way. So I think as it is, even if you forget about the inheritance tax, there's a problem with our inheritance law because it doesn't do what it says it does. And having said that, of course, if you have children and the children are dependent, they must be taken care of because that is when children really need their parents the most. But once they are adults, they have their own business. They've gone out into the world. Now they get an extra inheritance over that. They don't need it. So some people might. So that's why you can put in a threshold, as I suggested in the second article. But they're not in need of any support. And they, as Magnus said, it is unfair that somebody must get something for nothing. Well, they do actually get something for nothing, especially if they're adult, because they didn't work for their parents' money, their parents worked for it.
It does come back to that issue of property rights, Stuart, that you mentioned, that if you've worked for those assets, that you should be free to donate or transfer or direct those assets in any which way, shape or form you'd like to. But Pierre, I want to say on this issue, because with respect, I think you failed to make the case for the fundamental premise of your argument, namely that the transfer of a person's estate to the state would promote social solidarity. Mm-hmm. And within the South African context in particular, we've seen a state that has a predatory elite. We've seen corruption. We've seen the misallocation of tax revenue. We certainly haven't seen that revenue used in a meaningful way to reduce inequality. How will this change?
So your point is perfectly correct, and I, in the article, second article I wrote, I concede that. Of course, at the moment the state is a mess. If the money is going to go to the state, it's not going to be potentially be used for actually addressing some of the needs that there are. So my proposal is not engaging with the actual here and now because the state is not capable. I'm making a conceptual argument to say that we have to try, in South Africa, the problem is we are so busy thinking about today, we're not trying to imagine how the world is supposed to look. And so that's where I'm coming from. And I'm saying, of course, the state is incapable. Of course, at the moment, it cannot work. But I'm thinking of what is it that we really want if we want to have a fair world. And one of those things would be people will have some solidarity with one another, because that is the kind of society that if you really believe that your children are important, you want to create, because in the short term, the inheritance and so on is maybe in your own interest and your children's interest, but it's not in the interest of the society and the children's children and so on, because a society that has no social solidarity, in which there is vast and unsustainable inequality, is one in which your children and your grandchildren are not going to flourish.
One might argue that social solidarity is paying one's taxes the first time round without the state having a second bite at the cherry after you die.
Yes, that is true. So one way of getting around the argument is to say, and I quote John Stuart Mill in that regard, he's like, I call him a cuddly liberal, but he had this idea that you have to limit the transfer of wealth to your children, put a cap on it. And he did it by saying, of course, we can change this and say, you have every right to do with your property as you want. But once it's transferred to whoever you bequeath it to, it will be taxed there. Because then it's more fair, because then you tax it where it is actually the people who have not earned it. So if you win the lotto, the person who wins the lotto gets that. If you inherit, you sort of kind of win the lotto also, but in a slightly different way. It is taxed there. Then really the question is, which, I don't have technical expertise in inheritance law, but that's where you then think, what is the degree of the taxation? That I've not made any commitment to what that might be. Will it be starting at 5 million or 10 million or 15 million? Will the rate go up to 60, 70, 80, 100, whatever? But that seems to me to get slightly around the problem of the double taxation and also the property rights argument.
We are now joined by Judge Dennis Davis, Chair of the Davis Tax Committee, and we've been debating Pierre Defosse's two columns recently, calling for us to reimagine the way we look at inheritance tax in one of the most unequal societies on earth. Judge Davis, thanks for joining us. What do you make of the idea to tax inheritance on a sliding scale all the way up to 100%?
Well, I think 100% is, you know, this is the tragedy of so much of the debate that we're having in this country at the moment, that every sort of populist is now on the bandwagon about, you know, with uninformed suggestions, just as we've got expert virologists who know nothing but virology. The idea that you tax at 100% is patently ridiculous. And why that's a pity is because the actual idea that we should increase estate duty, that is inheritance tax, in a country with the egregious inequality of South Africa is something which is absolutely on the agenda. It's something which is absolutely critical to our debate, but it shouldn't be 100%. And in fact, all the authorities at Pierre Defosse cites don't actually talk at all about that. Indeed, Piketty, by the way, doesn't think that an inheritance tax is the way to go. He thinks a wealth tax is the way to go, and he explains that perfectly well in his recent book. So I think the idea, our idea, was to jack up estate duty radically. I think that, and I would certainly buy the idea that over a certain amount, 100 or 200 million rand, you could have a 50% estate duty, but it would gravitate. So you'd have an abatement, as we suggested, of 15 million. You could probably have that up to 20 million, if not more, which means people wouldn't pay estate duty for that because you have to give allowances for the spouse who essentially may survive. But thereafter, I do think we should be increasing estate duty, and I do think it should go up significantly. But really, when you get to the 100%, it just, what annoys me is it destroys the central argument that we should be having a better estate duty.
Well, how much would that bring in for the fiscus in terms of an increase now from the current, I think, 0.1% of total tax income that are brought in via the 20 to 25% estate duty? Would it make a significant contribution?
Well, it's interesting. The Katz Commission, which I was a part and was involved in actually drafting and stuff, estimated that, of course, it never brought in more than 0.1%, which was absolutely nothing. If you actually dealt seriously with proper, and we need this just generally, better asset understanding of who's got assets in South Africa. Of course, we don't even know that because that's something that has to be done by SARS. If we knew that better, we thought at the time, given comparative evidence, that estate duty could bring in between 1 to 1.5, maybe even 2% of the tax take. If you took 2%, Michael, that would basically, on the budget figures, bring in roughly about 28 billion. That's a lot of money. And I would
we could
think
fund another SAA.
Sorry?
We could fund another SAA with that.
Well, I'm not suggesting that for a moment, Michael. One of the things about being involved in the tax side is one has no role on the expenditure side.
Certainly doesn't. I want to come back, Magnus, to your point around the impact that an estate tax increase, let's say 100% is off the table, and we are talking, as Judge Davis says, about increasing the quantum above a certain amount on a sliding scale, say between 100 and 200 million at 35%, above 200 million at a 50% rate. What impact do you think that would have on capital formation in the country? Do you think that would lead to the kind of exodus that we saw in Sweden, for example, with the IKEA family heading for other more favorable pastures?
Yes, that's correct. That's what will happen. I agree with Professor Davis that I would prefer increase in the estate duty, and the very wealthy who can afford it. But there comes a point, and we know from many studies, depending how you interpret the Laffer curve, at some point people will say there's a trade-off between how much I'm prepared to leave behind or pay in taxes or doing something to remove myself in a modern world where there are tax havens which will accept me and my money. But I'd just like to come back to the additional statement that Prof. de Vos made in his utopian world where everybody must be born equal. Now, you made the statement that you don't need any support or any support from your parents. You must go and earn it yourself. That's the definition of meritocracy. That's not how the real world works. And what would happen to small and medium-sized businesses that rely on inherited capital from families to finance a small a company which becomes a medium-sized company, which over time in the second and the third generation becomes a listable company, whether it's in South Africa or in America or in Germany, and that will totally remove that incentive for people to go out and start these companies without any capital. If you don't have the capital in a country like South Africa, it'll come to an end. And that's exactly what we don't need. We need people with startup capital to go and start businesses, to start employing people. And I don't know how that will work in the real world where I work. You know, people glibly often talk about inherited wealth and people inheriting a lot of money. In my sphere, most people are very prudent about intergenerational wealth. They use it to finance new companies, perhaps farms, perhaps new businesses, which creates more capital. And in the end, you have very large companies. What will happen if this is taken away from a society that everybody is equal day one? Where will they get the capital to finance any kind of economic activity?
Pierre, how do you respond?
Well, this is not really the argument I'm having. I'm having a conceptual argument about the principle, which I think people should accept, that the current system is perpetuating inequality, and that we have to find a way to change the system. How that will work, I have not put a blueprint on the table for how it will work within the system, within the capitalist system, within the global market, whatever. I'm wanting people to accept the principle that the way in which we think about inheritance, and even beyond that, the way that inheritance is currently done in South Africa, the common law of inheritance valorizes the nuclear family, all those things, that it should be revisited. So that's maybe arguing in slightly different register than Magnus is arguing.
And one can understand how the family from the traditional nuclear family has evolved, and certainly our law needs to take that into account. Stuart, just as we conclude here, how do we address, and let's perhaps zoom out a little bit more, because I think we're in agreement that 100% inheritance tax just wouldn't work. How do we start addressing this deep inequality in South Africa?
Look, inequality is a problem in itself. We're arguing about whether an inheritance tax is an instrumental device to use to address inequality. As Judge Davis has said, you know, Piketty argues for a wealth tax as an alternative. You know, if we go into full Marxist literature, the abolition of private property deals with inheritance because there just is none. So, you know, people who address inequality head on see the inheritance debate as a bit of a side issue. Now, look, South Africa has a unique problem, and Professor de Vos hasn't gone into this, but our intergenerational inequality is exacerbated by the racial dimension. The fact that the origins of those assets go back to a period in which you can't really, you know, you can't satisfactorily argue there's a legitimate original claim, legitimate original title. And I think that fact is in here, but it's extremely complicated debate to discuss the legitimacy of property rights. But it does mean that in South Africa, the inheritance debate is slightly, you know, slightly more nuanced and more important than the general cases internationally because of those pragmatic, you know, those issues that are actually issues of principle. So, you know, I agree with Prof. de Vos. It's very important to discuss the principle here, but I also think the principle is about inequality. And we're really asking a practical, pragmatic question about whether inheritance tax is going to deal with the problem. And I have sincere doubts that it will.
And Judge Davis, just to conclude with you. How would you be focusing attention on the central issue of inequality here, and perhaps not just through the inheritance tax, but more broadly? Because one can look at inherited inequality in terms of class, and going to private schools versus public schools. We can't suggest for a second that we now start doing away with private education to level the playing field. I mean, where does one end here?
Well, let me make three very brief points, Michael. One is that inequality is dealt with in many, many levels. The fact that we've not done the structural reform that we should, the fact that we've got people living in townships cheek by jowl, and we've done nothing about the spatial geography of our country, the fact that we have a degraded education system, and that we've really not done anything for historically disadvantaged, you happen to be presently disadvantaged people, means we are going to perpetuate inequality. The fact that the fiscal side of things actually does have some role is not unimportant. And the only reason why we should be debating inheritance tax is because I do think that we should think about a wealth tax. The trouble about it is it's difficult to implement immediately. Estate duty is not difficult to implement immediately. It's a pity that Professor DeForce didn't look at the comprehensive report that we've done as part of the Davis Tax Committee, which deals both with these philosophical questions and the implementation. I don't agree entirely with Magnus Haystack that the evidence suggests that if you had a higher rate of estate duty, it would effectively do the kind of deleterious consequence to investment. The jury, in terms of the economic literature, is out on that point. But the fundamental issue is this, that what at least an inheritance tax does, in a serious way, not 100%, not a populist record, which seems at the moment, as all over the world, prefer inequality over equality. And let's be honest about it, after COVID-19, this issue of inequality is not going to go away. So we have to deal with it, both on the fiscal side, both on the financing side, and both on the basis of actually reconstructing our society through economic policies, not just through tax, which reconstitutes our society and deals with inequality. The truth is we've wasted 25 years in this regard, and it's only getting worse, and we've got to rethink economic policy from top to bottom in this regard. I haven't got time to debate that, but it's a debate we should have.
Well, we'll certainly have you back on the show to debate that. That was Judge Dennis Davis, Chair of the Davis Tax Committee, along with Stuart Theobald, Chairman of IntelliDex, Magnus Haystack, Investment Strategist and Director of Brenthurst Wealth, and Pierre DeForce, Claude Leon Foundation Chair in Constitutional Governance at the University of Cape Town, and author of the blog Constitutionally Speaking, talking about inheritance tax. The estate tax has long exempted most wealth from its clutches, and because it's relatively easy to avoid, its economic effects are relatively small, unless you're obviously one of those talented tax lawyers. So let's look for better ways to level the economic playing field. And I think fixing the education system is certainly a good place to start.